Welcome to episode 63 of the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm Beth Below. Since 2010, the Introvert Entrepreneur has been providing information and inspiration for introverts who want to amplify their strengths, as well as for extroverts who want to understand why introverts are so doggone quiet. I'm a professional coach, author, and speaker based in the Pacific Northwest and serving introverts worldwide. Before I was a nonprofit professional and then a coach, I was a musician. Actually, to say I was a musician feels a bit like I'm dismissing an important part of my life. Even though I haven't picked up my clarinet in several years, it's something that never leaves me. My creativity now shows up in different ways, some of them musical, some of them not. But I've long been interested in what it takes for an introvert to be a performer. It's a vulnerable life, one that requires levels of self-promotion and a constant putting yourself out there. So when I was connected with Andy Mort, a musician and writer in the UK, I thought it'd be a perfect opportunity to explore the intersection of being a performer while being introverted. Andy is a UK-based musician and writer, also known as Atlum Schema. He's also a podcaster, HSP, which means highly sensitive person, and introvert. His latest album was just released back in March, and it's titled Year Zero. And the music I've used for this podcast comes from that album. It's track 2, and the title is called Empire of the Soul. You can download this track or the entire release on iTunes by searching for Atlum Schema, and that's spelled A-T-L-U-M-S-C-H-E-M-A. So A-T-L-U-M-S-C-H-E-M-A. In describing his blog and podcast, Andy writes, "Sheep dressed like wolves is for people I define as reluctant leaders and gentle rebels who long to make an impact in a sometimes strange, absurd, and often overwhelming world. Through this blog and podcast, I want to deconstruct and explore this stuff and help introverts and highly sensitive people recognize and overcome what is holding us back from living the passion, purpose, and meaning we seek." Andy's free ebook, available on his site and through his blog, Sheep Dressed Like Wolves, is titled The Gentle Rebel: Live with Passion, Purpose, and Patience in a World That Overwhelms You. Hi, Andy. Welcome to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me, Beth.
Yeah. I would love to start out by knowing what's making you smile today.
I guess having some time to write. It's been such a manic few weeks, kind of been releasing my new album and gigging and doing all sorts of stuff, and I've had a big project on as well, so just getting a chance to sit down and write for a block of time more than about 15 minutes, which is what I've managed to do today, so that has put a smile on my face.
Oh, excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And that's no small feat, given how busy that you've been.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I'm really looking forward to talking with you because, like you said, you know, you've got a lot going on and you have a number of traits that come together in an interesting way, being an introvert and a highly sensitive person, or an HSP, as the literature also calls it, as well as being a musician and an artist. So I want to start out by hearing a little bit more about, how did you discover that you were both an introvert and a highly sensitive person?
Well, I guess it was a two-step process, really. In the middle of 2011, I read an article by Carl King, which was, I think it was called The 10 Myths About Introverts. And it had been sort of shared on Twitter or Facebook or something. And I just clicked on it out of curiosity, really, not having ever sort of read anything about introversion, didn't really know anything about it. So kind of read it. And then those 10 myths were sort of like the probably my first kind of aha moment of, wow, these are a little stories that I've been told at one time or another and believed about myself without having, you know, anything other than it simply being sort of a part of my personality to kind of contextualize them with. So that was the first thing. Then I got hold of The Introvert Advantage by Marty Olsen Laney, which Carl King was sort of citing a lot in his article. I think it was sort of based around that. So lapped that up, like read it cover to cover in a few days. And that was the sort of continuation of that kind of, wow, recontextualizing a lot of my experiences and kind of reframing sort of negative stories that I told myself about myself over the years. And starting to kind of see the unawareness of my natural temperament and the fact that I was probably not behaving in the most conducive ways to get the best out of myself. I remember there was one of my, I think school, there's a lot of experiences at school that was kind of like, oh, okay, that makes sense. One of which was I was in a seminar at university, well, it was at university rather than school, but and the lecturer just picked on me to answer a question completely out of the blue. And I had one of those complete shutdown moments. I don't know if you've ever experienced
one of those. Oh, yeah.
it just feels like your brain is dripping out of your ears and you've got nothing in there to sort of, you know, rely on. And the more you think and the more you panic, the worse it gets. And that was quite a big moment because it kind of, I guess, made me sort of fear being caught out again. So I kind of stopped going to seminars and things like that, felt inadequate, stupid, what have you. And for the rest of the course, felt like a bit of an outsider, a bit of a fraud. So things like that were very much kind of recontextualized, reframed through the reading of The Introvert Advantage. Then I did kind of the Myers-Briggs test, established I was an INTJ, looked up what that meant, and then kind of started acting out of that in a way. Kind of, it's a dangerous little thing that can happen. You know, you start almost using it as a justification, using the label as a justification for, I was using it for not being particularly social or, you know, stepping out of my comfort zone, you know, using it as a reason not to do that. So, but then I kind of reached a point where I was just annoying myself by doing that. And so it's good that there's a sort of element of self-awareness that I was like, right, I'm imprisoning myself here with something that's actually, you know, it served to free me initially, but then it's not anymore. And I think that's because the Myers-Briggs result was actually kind of not the whole picture, you know, and there's a lot of contradictory stuff in what I read about the INTJ profile and stuff around that from what I actually felt, you know, the way I actually am myself, you know, I sort of the emotional connection with art, you know, being drawn towards creative rather than sort of scientific pursuits and the kind of empathy that I would feel for people. And, you know, that drove a kind of passion and ability to help, care for and understand a friend of mine who sort of been caring for, who's got dementia. So that sort of didn't quite all add up. It's a very long-winded answer to your question, but
well, it's usually quite the journey. Yeah. That's what I'm hearing here, is that it's an evolution of thought.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, yeah, the final bit was basically a sort of delve deeper with those sorts of questions, being like, it doesn't feel quite like the whole thing there. And then came across an article just last year, actually, written about highly sensitive people, and kind of linked to Elaine Aron's website. She's the author of the book, The Highly Sensitive Person, kind of pioneer of a lot of research in the 90s about it and stuff. So I took the self-test on there, came out overwhelmingly as an HSP. And then I think that was the point that I needed to get to in terms of the freedom that comes from self-awareness and understanding, because it kind of just fitted and started to help me think, right, okay, this is who I am. Now, how can I best accomplish what I want to accomplish and be the best I can to those around me in light of that, as opposed to, okay, this is apparently who I'm supposed to be and how I'm supposed to behave. I better change my life and my opinions in order to conform to that. And I should really make my choices based on what, you know, an INTJ character profile stereotypes me to do or whatever, which is kind of that unconscious route that I was going down before reading that book, I guess.
Well, what I appreciate is that you are pointing out that the profile only tells part of the story, and that even within that profile, some pieces will fit and others won't.
Yeah.
And that it takes a process of reflection and discernment and continuing to kind of dig and say, okay, so if that doesn't fit, I wonder what that means. And it sounds like that's kind of how you came upon the HSP side of things, and that added like another layer of understanding to what you're experiencing in that context.
That's exactly it, yeah.
As you mentioned in the intro there, you're also a writer in addition to a musician, and you wrote a book, I believe it was fairly recently, The Gentle Rebel, Live with Passion, Purpose, and Patience in a World that Overwhelms You.
Yep.
And that's available as a free download on your website, correct?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Well, as I was reading it, something jumped out at me that I really appreciated. I wanted to share and then get a little bit more story from you. You wrote, for the HSP, sensitivity is not something we can simply turn off. We are not describing an emotion. Sensitivity in this context is our capacity for receiving and processing information and external stimuli. It's something we're born with, which has both positive and negative implications, especially for those of us bridging the gap between our creative inner being and the scary, critical, and highly stimulating outside world. First, I really appreciated that distinction between sensitivity being an emotion and more something that you experience.
Yeah.
And a context. But I wondered if you could say a little bit more about what are the positive and negative implications that have uncovered for you in the past year or so since you've made this discovery.
Yeah, I think positively, overwhelmingly, the implications of my own sensitivity is probably tied in with the effect that it has on relationships with other people. As I said earlier, in 2011 seemed like quite a big year. I started helping care for a friend who'd been diagnosed with Lewy body dementia, which is basically a dementia with kind of symptoms similar to Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Quickly started to kind of build a really close bond with him in my ability to sort of understand his needs and the processes going on that didn't make sense on the surface, you know, because he wasn't sort of articulating those needs. He wasn't articulating overtly or verbally like what he needed from people. And so over time, as he deteriorated further, I found the kind of intuition side of things, the ability to sort of pick up on signals and just understand without sort of traditional verbal communication, I guess, sort of that kind of really developed quite a special thing. And I guess it's kind of a case of picking up on nuances in behavior and repetitive patterns and signs that would occur at certain times that meant he was needing something in particular or whatever. And I guess it's the same with any relationships. You know, there's a real positive side to kind of intuitively feeling unarticulated moods and kind of tangibly having a grasp on the vibe of a group of people or like an environment or something, because it means that you kind of have the opportunity and, dare I say, responsibility to kind of address it and make things comfortable for people. So I think that's the positive side of that aspect, I guess, which also has a flip side, because the kind of the negative moods and, you know, generally negative people can have a detrimental impact on energy and stuff. And I actually wrote a blog post a while back before I knew anything about high sensitivity, about mirroring moods and how as humans we have a strange ability to sort of, you know, mirror the moods of other people that we're talking to and communicating with. And, you know, if you're having a conversation with someone who's sad or disappointed or frustrated or annoyed or whatever, then we often sort of reflect that back and we can perpetuate the feeling in them to some extent and then also absorb that and take that on board. And, you know, there's a kind of, I don't know what the right word is, but you know.
I always talk about it with my husband as being contagious.
Contagious. That's exactly the word that I was looking for. Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's definitely a trait in the highly sensitive person. And I get it quite significantly, you know, if I'm around overly sort of negative people too much, then I will reflect that or become sort of judgmental and negative and annoyed and, you know, down, basically, probably more internal than external. Yeah. And it's exactly the same with kind of positive people as well and positive situations and stuff. And in the context of the gap between creative inner being and critical outside world, as it said in that part of the book, and another negative impact is simply that of feedback, I guess. And, you know, I think we all suffer when we're criticized, don't we? We don't like to hear negative things, you know, we need sort of 100 positive things to make up for one negative thing that we hear. But I think over the years, I've sort of developed a few things to sort of bridge that gap. Firstly, just having a why, you know, having a bigger picture is so important because it sort of puts everything into perspective. So, you know, if I feel like and I know that I'm serving people with what I do, then it makes it a lot easier to sort of cope with the overstimulation that comes from stepping out and releasing stuff into the world, especially the sort of creative stuff, and feeling like there's a kind of bigger message than simply, oh, I want to be a musician, or I want to be a writer, or I want to start a business or whatever, is so important because it kind of establishes a firmer foundation so that if you are kind of rocked a little bit, you've got more to sort of draw back on than, I want to be a musician, someone said you're rubbish. Okay, that's the end of that then. And yeah, sort of the way that you communicate the message is simply a vehicle. It's not the core of who you are. It's not your voice. Your voice comes through your delivery. Your voice isn't the method of delivery itself, if that makes sense. And then secondly, I've created an email folder called Encouraging Emails, where I basically put all of the emails I receive from people that are reassuring and encouraging, especially like within the context of that, of the why, as I just talked about, because it's sort of, you know, when times are tough or I'm going through a particularly hard part of a project or whatever, can sort of remind myself that there are real people who might need that message that the art is carrying. And even if I've lost sight of what it is or, you know, the specific nature of that, kind of helps me trust that I just need to plow on and do a little bit at a time. And, you know, it is making a difference, even if that's out of my control or beyond what I can see. So, and then finally, just keep reading. You know, there's so many inspiring people with inspiring stories, tips of our fingers, you know, on the internet and everything, and reading and hearing stories of people who have battled through the same fears and struggles as the ones that I'm going through, you know, provides great strength. And that, again, perspective for getting back to a core place where actually the kind of adversity and the failure and the feeling of being overwhelmed can actually then turn into a positive thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And you've highlighted that the gap, you know, as I think of it, as I'm listening to you talk, highlights the vulnerability that happens when we are putting that creative inner being out there into the critical outside world.
Yeah.
And it strikes me that, I don't know if introverts per se would feel that vulnerability more strongly, but it seems like having that HSP trait might heighten the awareness of the vulnerability or the one's ability or capacity to be able to respond to the critical outside world.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Well, along those lines, your career as a musician, I mean, you know, talk about putting yourself out there and being vulnerable in every, you know, sense of the word. It might seem on the surface as being very at odds with your introverted HSP nature. How do those traits influence you as an artist?
Yeah, I guess in that respect, it's kind of a blessing that I didn't identify the right. HSP introvert stuff before I got totally stuck in there. So
yeah, really.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you followed your why first.
Yes.
You know, that's what I hear. Yeah.
Like, and I guess, you know, music has always played a massive part in my life as well. Like, it's always affected me very deeply. You know, I kind of describe it as my natural language, more natural than English. You know, it's where I can express the otherwise sort of inexpressible, if that makes sense. And I suppose the conflict, or where things start to kind of be at odds with one another, is in the expression of the music when it comes to those parts of my personality, I guess. And it's the kind of performance, which you've alluded to being a bit crazy as a taking on a career as a musician, and just putting it out there into the world. Yeah. And, you know, I've never found gigging a particularly appealing thing to do, and kind of every time I head out on the road, I have to really force myself into it, but then equally know how important it is. Funnily enough, I don't think it's not the performance side of things that is hard. I think it's the stuff around, it's the things like getting to the venue or knowing where I'm going to park, or, you know, thinking who's going to be there, what am I going to do about eating, what's the sound engineer going to be like, all that sort of stuff. That's where the kind of, I don't know, the stress emerges from. It's not the, I'm going to have to stand on stage and perform in front of loads of people. That's kind of actually, once I'm at that point, I'm safe and I've got control and I'm doing what I'm there to do and can perform the songs that I've done. You know, I've played countless times, and it's, Yeah, that's the easy bit. And I guess it's similar to what introverts who are into public speaking, you know, it's a similar thing to that. It's not the performance that feels potentially problematic. It's the energy is kind of sapped by all the other stuff around it, and the unsureties and the things you can't control, I guess. I bet you identify with that.
I do. In fact, I have a speaking engagement tomorrow and I'm thinking about that, and it's like, you know, of course it's in a place I've never been. It's a venue I've never seen. It's people I don't know. I'm trusting when I show up that I'll have the things I need, that people will want to be there, that they'll want to hear it.
Yeah.
And right. You know, once I get up, it's all good, but it's kind of the lead up to it that can be stressful because there are so many unknowns. I mean, there are certain things you do know on an intellectual level, but then emotionally, sometimes it feels a little different.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. This time's it's not going to be like that last time. There's something's going to go wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. And what I've learned is to say, okay, I wonder what's going to go wrong.
Yeah.
And just accept that, you know, something's not going to be right. And I can only prepare so much. And so, you know, that's where we're called on, I think, to be flexible and adaptable and not get too attached to something being exactly so, because that right there alleviates a lot of stress.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm curious about, you know, over the years, as you've gained experiences that where you might be unclear about exactly what to expect, how have you dealt with that? What methods do you use to kind of work through any of that anxiety or stress?
I think probably similar to the previous points about, you know, coming back to that core why again, and just almost just telling myself to just plow on, just do it, you know. And I think, you know, the more experience I've had, the more I've got to draw on, you know, a bigger bank of sort of, well, experiences to draw on and to say, well, it's going to be fine. Like, and just to use that to go forwards, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the more positive experiences we build up, then the more we have to draw on that says evidence, everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I want to wrap up our conversation with a question that I ask all of my guests. And that's, if you were granted a 3-week vacation on Introvert Island and you could only take 3 books with you, what would you take with you and why?
I was thinking about this. I would probably take an empty journal, because I think the opportunity, 3 weeks is a good opportunity to sort of get a lot of thoughts out. There'll be a lot of stuff going on in my head on Introvert Island, I'm sure. Probably fill up a journal in that time.
Yeah.
Also, I think it'd be a great opportunity. I have to take some photo. I'd take a photo of my wife with me, and it would probably give me a good opportunity to finally get our wedding photo album sorted, because we're getting nagged about that. So, you know, to make the parents happy, I'll probably, you know, sort that out, take it with me, because it actually would contain pictures of all the people that mean the world to me anyway, so perfect. And then Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace, which I've now been reading for 5 years but never managed to kind of, I don't know, buckle down for long enough to get any significant portion of it finished. I think I'm still on chapter 4 or something, so it'd be a great test, because if I can read it on a 3-week vacation on Introvert Island, then I will never be able to read it. So it kind of give me an opportunity to say, right, call it quits. If I fail, then I'm just going to give up.
Yeah. We probably all have a book like that in our, yeah, or several books where it's like, we just can't make it past a certain point for whatever reason. And it's great that you're taking it there to give it a fair shake.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to give up on it too early. You know?
Right.
It's only 5 years.
You still have many years to go. Well, what is the best? You mentioned, I'm sorry, in the beginning you mentioned that you had just released a new album, and we heard some of that in the intro to this interview, and I'm going to play a little bit more at the end. So can you tell us a little bit about that and how people can learn more about you and your writing and your music?
Yeah, the album's called Year Zero, and it was out at the end of March. The best place to kind of connect with me and hear it is probably if you just go to sheepdresslikewolves.com, and there's links to it from there. I've got an about page which kind of says everything that you need to know. And you can get hold of the book, The Gentle Rebel, as well through there, which is basically reflecting and kind of reframing my life in the context of the high sensitivity stuff that I was talking about earlier. And you can get that for free if you subscribe to my mailing list. Yeah, I think there's links to everything through sheepdresslikewolves.com.
Great. Well, thank you, Andy. It's been a great pleasure chatting with you. And you've really shared some awesome both perspective and your experiences, and as well as insights that I think will help any introvert or HSP help themselves be a little bit more comfortable stretching and being more vulnerable, especially when it comes to creative pursuits. So thank you.
I hope so. Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's been great.
We'll be closing this podcast with more of Empire of the Soul from Andy's latest release, Year Zero. I invite you to listen to the end and consider hearing more of Andy's work on iTunes. It's important for us introverts to stick together and support each other's work. Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this podcast, I invite you to share it with your friends, family, colleagues, and social media networks. And consider leaving a review on iTunes or on the podcast webpage. If you'd like to learn more about my coaching, speaking, and training services, you can find me online at www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. You'll also find information about my first book, Insight: Reflections on the Gifts of Being an Introvert, which is available through Amazon.com. This is Beth Below of The Introvert Entrepreneur, and until we meet again, remember that success is an inside job.
Settlement fell beneath our feet. They beg and call, shouting for freedom from arms and industry. We're the accepted face. We make the rules for the game. Carry the gun filled with fatal saving grace. This is an empire, I'm sure. 'Cause the thing that we fear is the thing we fight for. This is the empire of the soul. This is an empire, I'm sure. 'Cause the thing that we fear is the thing we fight for. This is the empire of the soul. They stole the past. Culture and evidence fell beneath our feet. A small man knelt, reached for the gun I had given him, so I took my aim. Carry the gun filled with fatal saving grace.